Hey guys, welcome back to Melanin Speaking. What's up, Melanin fam? I'm your host, Renisha.
And Natalia.
And we're here with another great episode. Today's guest has the license to ask the tough questions, okay? Literally makes you think, you're right. I deserve everything and more. You're right. Everything I need to be questioning, I deserve. Please give it up for our very special guest, Trisha. Thank you so much for joining us today. We're super excited to have you and your experience and just your personality, me knowing you, just because you're my own personal life coach itself. And I just love everything about you. I mean, I don't think I've had a session yet without a little bit of a teary-eyed with you, but no, you literally make me think about some things that I do like give that recognition for myself, but it's also a nice thing to have someone else to give you. And I think I'm super excited to have you and to like spread that word and knowledge for other people who are listening to our podcast to have.
And just to come in here, like I always hear stories as well. Like Renisha will tell me, she's like, oh yeah, I met Trisha today. Or she's like, and I have all this homework to do, but girl. Oh,
I love it.
Yes.
I do share my moments. I feel like, listen, Trisha got me in my feels, but here's the homework that I have. And she's always like, she'll try to help as well. Be like, here's a picture, make sure she knows. And I'm like, yes, you're right.
Yes. Oh yeah, I do remember.
I love that sisterhood that you have a community to share that with and your growth and your journey. That's amazing.
Yeah,
definitely.
Sisters for sure.
I mean, more so now that we live here.
Oh my God.
Trisha, I kind of don't know that much about you as compared to Renisha. I was wondering if you can kind of give us a little like brief intro into yourself and like what you do.
Definitely. Firstly, thank you both for having me. I'm really excited to be here. Renisha, back at you, by the way, just as I always find my clients super inspiring and you inspire me in loads of different ways as well. So right back at you with the love. Okay, where shall I start? So professionally, I call myself a life and empowerment coach. I'm a certified life coach and I work with women from all backgrounds, but particularly women from Black, Asian, and global majority backgrounds to create lives and careers that you love outside of social conditioning. Mm-hmm. And what do I mean by social conditioning? Who are you? What do you want? And how are you going to get there outside of the pressures and expectation of culture, tradition, society, family, friends, the boxes that we're put into as women, the boxes that we're put into as women of color, the boxes that we're put into as young women, all of those boxes, who are you and what do you want outside of all of that is what is the space that I create for my clients. I'm really a space to feel seen and heard. And as we go through kind of the questions, I'll tell you about my journey on kind of how we got to that point. I do this through one-to-one coaching and group coaching workshops. Okay, so why do I work with women of color? I identify as British Indian, Gujarati. And I grew up in, and my parents were actually born in East Africa rather than India, and then had a migration journey to the UK. Hmm. I grew up, I identify myself as like a Northwest London girl, and you're both from accent, you're both American.
Yeah.
So I don't know how much you know about the UK scene, but I feel like Northwest London has its own unique identity, and definitely being like Indian in Northwest London, it has its own unique identity. And I grew up kind of just outside of there in a predominantly white neighborhood. And that's where a lot of my experiences kind of started forming. So I wasn't the smartest kid at school. I wasn't like the most academically smart, I should say.
Yeah.
And as a result, I think that, and I don't know what both of your experiences are, in school, those that were really struggling got a lot of help. And those that were really smart were really pushed because they wanted them to achieve the grade so that the school could look good. Those of us that were riding in the middle was just like, okay, you're good. Like, you're not a troublemaker. You're fine. Like, just go off on your way. What was the impact of that is that for probably until my adult years, I had nobody tell me what I was really good at. You're fine. Mm-hmm. Fine. Nobody really could tell me, or I never had anyone really believe in me, right? And I also kind of the South Asian element to this is that we, especially growing up, and I think the culture shifting a little bit now, is that, and I don't know about your cultures, we don't really give up a lot of praise. Like, your parents aren't clapping for you every time you stand up. Absolutely no way. Right. They're clapping for you when you get an A in maths. And although that happened at A level for me, it didn't happen all the time. So, you know, the claps were not coming.
Yeah.
And I grew up around smart, like really mathematically or scientifically smart cousins, peers, or creative. And I always felt like I didn't really know where I fit in or what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. What I knew, and I'm telling you kind of the story of kind of how Level Up started and where, you know, where we got to, where we got to, is what I always knew was that I, whenever I was faced with kind of or saw inequality or like injustice, it really aggravated me. Mm. From as young as I can remember, and I don't know what TV shows you watched growing up, but like I watched Sister Sister, Kenan and Kel, One-on-One, Fresh Prince. And I think I gravitated to all those shows because, for example, Tia and Tamira were the only people that I saw that, even though they weren't Asian, they were Black girls, but they were the closest thing to me on TV. Mm-hmm. And I remember any time watching the storylines around discrimination, I would be watching these shows when I was like six, well, maybe like 9, 10 years old. And I would feel so, I would know that I would feel enraged by it. Mm. But at that age, I didn't know what that, like what that meant, what that really, you know, what does this mean for me? Mm-hmm. It led to a career for me. I feel like I'm talking so much, by the way, so butt in at any point. It led to a career for me in, so then I did, figured out that I really wanted to make a difference in the world. Mm. I did a degree in international development, not in international development, in history and international relations. And then I did a master's degree in human rights and human values. And I started my career in the international development sector. And I managed, so I started off in an administration role. And over time, over like 4 or 5 years, I worked my way up to management. And essentially I managed projects on global development. So a lot of stuff around violence against women and girls, or countering violence against women and girls, sexual violence and conflict, a lot of projects in the Middle East on kind of conflict crises and global challenges, some counterterrorism work. Mm-hmm. And really heavy work. And also what I experienced in my time in this sector was that it is staffed by a lot of white people in offices in London. And I mean, you're both nodding, so you know the problems in that. And then it was kind of the, and what I experienced was, I would say, one of my jobs, I was paid significantly less than my white male counterpart. Mm-hmm. I experienced a lot of microaggressions. Mm. I couldn't identify, I didn't know what that meant at the time. I was young, I was 20, you know, 23, 24, didn't know what that meant. Was just always told also from, you know, what you, the messaging that we get as women, just to get your head down and work.
Yeah.
You know, don't mm-hmm. cause too much trouble. Mm-hmm. Don't be too difficult. So I was kind of getting my head down and working. Mansplaining was so real. Much. And you're, as a young woman, you're just like, okay, maybe this is just how it is. And then it was kind of it was 2020 when George Floyd happened. Mm-hmm. The world kind of paid attention. Unfortunately, to, you know, take that long to do so. And I think it shook things up in the development sector a little bit. And it also made me realize that this isn't a space that I want to be in long term. Mm-hmm. And actually I want to be part of something that is going to create, and I could visibly see impact. Mm-hmm. Like I wanted to create impact. I wanted to work to be able to see impact. Sometimes in development, you couldn't really see the impact of the work that you were doing from your offices. And then on a personal note, outside of that, I was in a mixed race relationship. So my partner at the time was half Jamaican, half English. In Indian culture, this is really taboo. And because there's something called the caste system. I don't know how aware you're, how aware you both are of this. And it was difficult for my parents. And though I'm so proud of them because they've gone on such a journey with this, by the end of that relationship, you know, they really embraced it. But to begin with, it was really tough.
Mm-hmm.
And what I realized was that as women of color, as a brown woman, we go through and experience so many traditional and cultural kind of barriers, expectations, things that I spoke about around social conditioning. It's like there are so many things that we have to figure out that is in addition to just figuring things out as a woman or a person or a human being.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like we're constantly, as women, as I grew in my career, I realized as women, we're constantly having to fight. Mm-hmm. We're constantly having to prove our worth. We're constantly having to fight to be seen. There's so much research and data around now that shows how women are still underpaid. There's the gender pay gap. Women are leaving the workforce. Women of color are leaving the workforce because they're just sick of the microaggressions. There is so much still out there. We're constantly having to fight. Even now, as an entrepreneur, I still have to.
Mm-hmm.
After I've had a 8-year-long career and I've been coaching for the last 4 years. And this made me realize that what I really wanted to do was create a space for women from Black, Asian, and Global Majority backgrounds to just figure it out and also feel seen and heard. If you remember what I said earlier, like I didn't have anyone to tell me what you're good at, that I believe in you. It came later on in life. I wanted to create a space where everyone, whether you're an A-star student, whether you're a D student, whether you're someone that is primed for leadership, whether you're someone in the workplace that you're just figuring out, a space to be seen and heard and also be told, like, you can be great at this.
Mm-hmm.
Because the foundations to anyone being able to be great and do what we do is self-belief. And then kind of closing off this very long introduction, where I started thinking about coaching was I found out about vision boards. I have my vision board here. I'll show it to you. And
I love this. That's honestly.
My one from last year. I have to update this for this year. I learned about vision boards. At the time, I was renting a tiny flat in Kilburn with my now husband, then boyfriend. And I was like, okay, I'm going to have five of my friends round, and we're going to do vision boards. I had little gift bags. I cooked like a nourishing meal. I got all the magazines together. I remember buying scissors and like coloring pencils. Like I went all out. I remember buying balloons to make it just a really intimate experience. And after that, they said, all five of the girls there said, this was the best thing that we've done for a really long time. You need to do this as a career. And I was like, well, I can't just run these little workshops in my apartment. And then one of the women said to me, I think the theory behind what you're doing is coaching.
Mm-hmm.
I think the theory behind it is coaching. And I think you should really explore this. Mm-hmm. And that is when I then took a sabbatical from work and figured it out. I did my coaching diploma. And that is when I started up my coaching practice, Level Up London. And I've been a coach for the last 4 years, worked with over, I would say, 55 women one-to-one over the last 4 years. And I would say it's taken me that long to really also see the impact, and we're having impact. And Ranisha, I love hearing kind of what you're saying there. that is kind of the story.
First of all, I can listen to Trish's voice all day, every day. Like, you're just like, if you can read me books, you can get, you're like my morning affirmation a little bit.
I love that.
You're like, but also as I was listening to it, I was relating to it. Like, I know you like picked up our accents, but I feel like there was just so many similarities growing up, especially when you met, so like starting from the beginning a little bit in the sense of like starting school. We both went to Clarksville High. It is a predominantly white school. It is around the military base. So you have like a few sprinkles of like different cultures there, but it was that predominantly white school. And me, my experience, even though we were best friends during that time, we both had our separate experience. But my experience was kind of like that student, like you said, it was like kind of coasting. But also not only with just like the impact of like the students and even the teachers and me trying to fit in by joining a marching band and just feeling some sort of worth during those 4 years, anything to get me through, also had, you know, those parents kind of mindset as well of what they think you should be during that time. So I would say during after high school and going straight to college, right, went to Austin Peay State University, I actually had no idea what I wanted to do. But following my mother's footsteps, you know, I joined the ROTC, but it was just because I didn't have my own kind of mindset of where I wanted to be. I was just going. I was just following what everybody else was doing. Was you go to high school, and from high school, you go straight to college. Again, coasting, even in college, but then also trying to fit up a bit of a community there. So whether that was for us, like a fraternity, or again, I joined the marching band there because it was a bit of familiarity there. I still feel like I did not know what I wanted to do in life. And so again, I'm also at this time going to college full time, also working various jobs full time as well, even doing more volunteer jobs of taking with small businesses who has a similar mindset that what I want to do in life, and that's building a community of people like me, like Nat, like people of color, and just lifting those voices. So, you know, I'm putting myself in these spots. I'm, as they say, I keep busy, you know, I keep busy. And so, again, not saying that all of this was a waste of time, because obviously I wouldn't be where I am in life if it wasn't what I was supposed to do. But it's still that uncertainty. And like you said, I still, even though I don't like to say it out loud, I do like the recognition, but I also like it from people who do look, again, like me, or people or women like you yourself, Tris. I put you on a pedestal just because you're kind of like, what is it? A vision, right? You're on my vision board, and you're something that I want to be like, right? I want to be a woman who's making impacts for others. You know, I want to be someone's guidance if need be, if that makes sense. Like, yeah, you're like, again, it's one of those where we're across the seas, but we have so much similarities going on. And it's like something not moving and living out of America in a new country, and again, predominantly white, but I'm seeing some same struggles of people of color feeling a bit the same way, but I'm also seeing the way that they're handling those situations, and it's given me a bit of like a different perspective. And I like to see that no matter where we are, brown, black, we're going to fight. We're going to fight, and we're also going to push each other, lift each other up. And I absolutely would raise my hand to that always. I get so giddy over that. And again, that's why Trish, like, super excited to have you on here, but everything you're saying, I know it's just like
And I think, thank you for sharing your story. Firstly, as a coach, my juices are flowing.
I know you got me.
Any other questions? But I think that's what you touched on. That I think the piece that you said about you enrolled in the military, right? Because that was your mom's path. And because you didn't know, it's almost like we don't always know that the options that are available to us. And it's especially when you're from certain backgrounds, it's like the options available to you are what you've seen everyone else do. So for you, that was, you know, your mother's experience. Natalie, I would love to hear, or Natalia, sorry, Natalia, let me pronounce that properly. I would love, you know, to hear your experience. But, and for a lot of people, kind of, you know, for me, and in the South Asian space, and I think it's really similar in a lot of culture, it's either you're an engineer, doctor, or lawyer.
Yep.
And those are the options that are available to you. And I think through having conversation, I think now, you know, the dynamic shifting, we have social media, like people know that TikTok influencing is a thing. Mm-hmm. We didn't know that then. But also then we didn't know what coaching was. We didn't know that there was a curator, like could be a therapist. You know, I would say that, I think, so for me, I would say that I was like my family's secret keeper.
Mm.
Kind of, it comes naturally to me to be a safe space. Like, I can't tell you the amount of calls that I still get when someone is struggling with something. And it's your, what does a secret keeper mean? It means you're a safe space. Who tells you that you can make a career out of being a safe space? You know?
Mm-hmm. I'm learning this today, right now.
But you can, you know, it's like, what are the options? And I think, do you know what? I love, Renisha, what you said about I put you on a pedestal, and I cringed at that. But also, yeah. When we're in sisterhood, like even now meeting you both, we should all put each other on a pedestal,
mm-hmm.
right? Those that you surround yourself with, you should be putting each other on a pedestal. You should be thinking highly of everyone around you, because that's what kind of that self-belief piece, Renisha, and all that stuff we were speaking about, that's what levels us up. That's what elevates us, you know?
Mm-hmm. Level up.
Absolutely. And I think there's also another thing that you both kept hitting on, and I really want to emphasize how important this is, but also hearing these affirmations from people that look like you, because mm-hmm. I feel like it's one thing if I'm not gonna lie, if I hear it from a white person, I'm mm-hmm. like, okay, yeah, whatever, like, you're just trying to be nice, yep. or whatever. But if I hear it from somebody that I know goes through a similar experience that I do, maybe not the same capacity, but a little bit, yeah, a little bit similar, different. It hits different, mm-hmm. it feels more genuine, and mm-hmm. it feels like, okay, so you do actually see me,
mm-hmm.
and it's that point of being seen. And I think that is so important. And I think, again, everything that Renisha said, it's obvious that, you know, the coaching sessions that you have with her has made such a big impact, because for her to be able to share the story, mm-hmm. and for her to feel empowered enough to even, you know, share the importance of the struggles that she went through, and to also recognize that these are continuous, right? Like, mm-hmm. there's still such uncertainty. And I feel like there's so much power in owning that,
mm-hmm.
and sharing that in itself, because that's always going to be a part of you. And I feel like as people of color, we're always like, no, we can't do that. Like, we're always okay. Everything will always be all right. We'll get through it. Like, but we're missing that connection to ourselves. And mm-hmm. I think, yeah, we lose it so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
100%. It's like we have like toxic gratitude and toxic strength. It's like we keep going, but at what expense?
Okay. So as a coach, right, you have your philosophies like the empowerment. And I was just curious as what is a coaching philosophy that you have or give to your clients to kind of continue empowering their lives or making some sort of difference? You know, what is something you say?
I really love this question. And I think that you hit the nail on the head with empowerment. So what I say in my practice is what sets me apart, I guess, from other coaches. Like, all coaches will do this just in their own way. Mm-hmm. Is that I use neuro-linguistic programming skills grounded in empowerment principles. And what do I mean by empowerment principles? Like, to create empowerment, there are principles and there are steps. Mm-hmm. And the four key steps to empowerment is autonomy, mm-hmm. capability, community, and fulfillment. And when you work with me as a client, we kind of broadly cover these four terms. And what do I mean by those? So autonomy, we live in a developed country, right? Mm-hmm. We have a roof over our heads. We are able to feed ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of this, we have autonomy to make the changes that we want in our lives. We have the autonomy to do what we want to do. Often, when we're from marginalized backgrounds, that will have been dampened a bit. You know, we sometimes, if you're in, for example, if you're in an abusive relationship, feel that your autonomy has been taken from you, right? But you still do have autonomy. You know, we can build that autonomy back up.
Mm-hmm.
It is on you. You are the central part to this. And that's what I work. Firstly, that's the foundation. A client recognizing that they have the autonomy to change if they mm-hmm. want to. The second part of it is capability, and that's kind of the most important thing is, and when I talk about capability is also identity. It's also figuring out everyone on this earth is here for a reason. Mm-hmm. Everyone has a skill. Everyone is good at something. Just because what you're good at doesn't look like what that person is good at, and what that person is good at might be the thing that's like, you know, really great right now. I was going to use a really cringe like slang term. Like that's the thing that is like, you know, going. That doesn't mean that what you have is any less valuable.
Mm-hmm.
What we need to figure out, and through working with me, it's like we're figuring out what that is, what you're really great at. And some people don't actually know. Like genuinely, I had a whole career for 8 years. I didn't think I was really good at anything that I did then, honestly.
Yeah.
It was only until I became a coach that I was like, oh, this is what I'm good at. Like, I'm really good at this. It took me until my late 20s to figure that out. The next piece is community. And this is all around, like, we can't get anywhere ourselves and just by ourselves, right? And we will all have community. And if we don't, it's also thinking about what community do we want to be a part of? Who is your support system? You know, I get a lot of clients, like the first session that we do is a wheel of life, and it's like life, career, finances, family, friends. And, you know, I have some clients that come to me and friends is great. Some, mm-hmm. it's not so great, right? And that's because your values are shifting, maybe. That's because you're really strong. We all struggle with that, right? We all struggle with people around us at some point in our lives. And it's down to us to figure out who do we want to be in community with.
Mm-hmm.
Again, sharing my own example, it's now I identify myself as a coach, but also an entrepreneur, right? And my friend circle doesn't have a lot of entrepreneurs in it.
Mm-hmm.
As a result, they're not really able to understand all of my challenges or what I experience. And that is of no fault to them. It's not their experience. So therefore, as I'm going through shifts in my life here, it's also okay realizing I need to create a community of people. Like, you know, it doesn't have to be a whole group of people, but community of entrepreneurs, because that will then be your support system.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Recognizing when you need to make shifts. And then the last one is fulfillment. And I mean, that is kind of, that's the journey you're going on, right? And when you kind of have these three things in place, it's then kind of thinking about what is fulfillment? What does fulfillment look like? What is abundance? What am I excited to wake up to do every day? And then another philosophy I have is around kind of operationally for me, what I really try to do through my practice is be accessible. Mm. I think coaching as a tool is something that has been accessed by C-suite white professionals. Mm-hmm. And it isn't always accessible to people that look and sound like us, and also that don't look and sound like us, and but also are from, don't have always the means to pay for such service or know what such service is.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say one of my philosophies is around accessibility, really having even just rates that are accessible, and I think it is such a powerful tool, and I really want everyone who wants to and is ready to experience the power of coaching. I know that sounds a bit woo-woo, but that's kind of one of in the spirit of inclusivity as well, is that kind of accessibility piece for me.
No, I think that's so important. And I think as well, you hit a really good point that I liked about accessible for people that may not even know the means or how to get in. I feel like, I mean, a part of everything that you just said, like 100% us, but yeah, I think that's so important as well. And to being able to show that there is diversity in accessibility, I think, mm-hmm. is really important, mm-hmm. because I feel like you don't often see that. Every time I see something that's accessible, it's still inaccessible, because mm-hmm. I'm like, you don't hit everything. You're not pulling that intersectional approach to things. Like, it's just
right
for like one type of person.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm not going to rant, but
I think the point that you just raised there was really important around feeling like you vibe,
mm-hmm.
your therapist or your coach. That's kind of the most important thing. And I mean, I think you might have this question later, but in terms of when you're looking for a coach or a therapist, it's don't be afraid to shop around. You know, you may not land on the perfect person the first time, but make sure that it's working for you and feel, and also to be empowered to, if you have a session or two with the person and you feel it isn't, you know, your gut's telling you that that doesn't feel right, then don't be scared to say so, right? Don't commit to something if you feel like it isn't working for you.
Right.
Because I think that is, that it's really important in any of these relationships to feel comfortable, to feel safe.
Amazing. So like, I want to kind of go back a little bit. So what are some of your key personal development tools and exercises that you often recommend to your clients when you are going through your coaching process and your philosophy with them?
I can answer one of those. Not to, you know, spill the tea of what she does. I know, like, we worked on SMART goals and working on those. So that's, and then not just, I've learned with Trisha, like, really getting relatable and actually I can do SMART goals, which of course that's what they're supposed to be. But like, she created this chart and we broke it down to each what the acronym means, and then really, really detail. And like, I'll just put, for example, I don't know, like one of mine, I should know this by heart, really. One of mine was like getting more active and like feeling more like myself. And then it's asking the question, how do I do that? Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, well, I'm going to, you know, attend more pole dancing classes, or I'm going to, you know, go back to the gym. Going to try to eat healthy. How? You know, less sugar, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It's like one of the goals, I think it's something to think about, because I can give myself a goal, but is it something I can do? And give myself a realistic time frame, because for me as well, I can be like, oh, I want to lose weight by my next vacation, and that could be next month. That's not happening. That's thing, unless I'm starving myself, but I can never
do that.
I can never.
That never works. Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. I think it's one, the goal setting is a really big piece of it, and I think the more specific you get, the more likely we are to achieve it. I think that I think the biggest thing that I try to work with clients is, and Renisha, we've been through this, is why is it the right goal for you right now? Mm-hmm. Because sometimes, have you ever, you've set, you know, it's the new year, we have New Year's resolutions, and we kind of set our goals, but sometimes we don't, you know, we don't stick to them. Or, you know, it gets to March, April, and you're kind of, you know that you're not really working towards them. And we kind of beat ourselves up thinking, oh, I'm not disciplined enough, or I'm not motivated enough, or I don't have the mindset to be able to do this. When actually, if you go back to the root of that, it is more likely than not that the goal that you set wasn't quite the right goal for you at the time. And maybe we had to either take a step back or take a step forward. One way that I think is a really good way to think about goals, and one of the tools I use with all my clients, I run these workshops as well, is I'll go back to the vision board exercise. I think vision boards are an incredible tool to kind of have your big picture goals in front of you. It's a creative process, and it's a tool for manifesting and really manifesting what it is you want and how you're going to get there. And through my coaching, through Level Up, I have a twist on the vision board. So if anyone is listening or wants to do this, the approach that I take, and this is because I believe that how do we know what we want if we don't know who we are? So I start each of my vision boards with an exercise, a spider diagram. You either write your name in the middle or you draw yourself on the A3 card. And then I talk you through a series of questions to build up your identity. And your given identity, your core identity, and we build up all the things that make you you. And I ask you prompting questions, and we go through a whole series of questioning that makes you reflect on who you are right now. Because who you are right now could be different to who you were 6 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
You go through so many shifts right in life, And so it's really important to keep up to date with who you are right now on a really simple level. Last year, or maybe, you know, 2 years ago, I really enjoyed going out, partying. That is now, that's not my vibe. And you have to make the shift to, you have to recognize that, right? You have to recognize that that's not you anymore. So therefore you can't be in those spaces anymore, because if you're continuously putting yourself in those spaces, you're not being true to yourself. Mm-hmm. So we start with the identity piece. And then on top of that, I ask clients to start building a vision board. And it's really to mirror that idea of how do we know what we want if we mm-hmm. don't know who we are? So based on, okay, this is the person that I am, and again, we focus on that, on strengths and weaknesses and challenges, and then we build on, and who do I want to be this year? And how, where there's good things, how are we going to continue the good? You know, I hate the approach, not hate, that's such a strong word, wow. I really find it challenging in any kind of personal development narrative where we're always coming from a place of we need to start from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
And this idea that there was nothing before and now there's something after, because you always have things to build on. Mm-hmm. Like you have, there's always something that you always grow, right? So it's recognizing the stuff that is already good and making sure you continue to. Mm-hmm. So that for me, in terms of one of the tools that I really, that is kind of central to my practice, is vision boarding. And I think that going back to Renisha's point about SMART goals, it then helps to refine your SMART goals, mm-hmm. because you're thinking big picture. I showed you my vision board earlier, kind of putting all the images on there, and then you can refine it back to goals because you have, you know, all up there.
I love that. And I was just thinking, we had actually done a vision board session at the beginning of the year. And mm-hmm. I was like, oh, let's paint our vision boards, whatever, whatever. And then we went to do it. And I literally was like, I don't have anything. I was like, I'm just going to draw. I literally have it. It's literally just that. And it's like, just nothing. Like I completely failed at what a vision board was. And then I looked at Renisha's and she has like this whole path laid out. She has her goals everywhere, her little, like everything's painted. And I'm just like, okay. I was like, got it.
Life coach.
No. Like, I need to learn.
Yeah, let's do a vision board together. We can do it.
When it comes to like vision boards nowadays as well, I like, just because like I always talk with you about this, is like creativity. Like I miss the creativity. It's such a big thing for me. And so even though like we kind of use like cardboard, like we had an Amazon box, ripped that up, and we both love painting, I think it was just the aspect of like, for me, creating a vision board, my path and what that looks like is this road, and there's literally a sign on there, because I've asked the question, we spoke about this, in a sense of, am I on the right path? Just because I get into that cycle of like, am I doing the right thing? Was moving to Scotland something that I need to do? Oh, I feel like, I don't want to say this word, like in front of my life, go to the moment, but like sometimes it feels like a bit of like a failure. And then it just gets into that downward spiral where I would say better it, because it's like, okay, I remember that it just takes time. As long as I lay it out, don't give myself too much expectations, and don't think too far in the future, but also remembering to slow my mind. I remember you telling me that, Trish, is just slowing my mind. Mm-hmm. And that's been helpful. And so, yeah, I created that vision board. It's like, here's this pathway. Here are some things that I do want to accomplish, things I know I can accomplish within a year. I know that it's going to take the full year, and maybe even after the year to do so. Creating a vision board. But the aspect of just like writing my name or drawing myself, and then, you know, getting asked a series of questions and building on top of that is intriguing. Like I kind of want to redo my vision board. Is that in the cards for us?
Let's do it. Let's do a Melanin Speaks vision board. You can have a vision board for the podcast.
Because honestly, we got a mood board.
I love it.
Get into a vision.
That's amazing.
We do have a mood board, which I learned mood board and vision boards are sort of the same, but kind of different. I don't know the difference.
I don't know the difference. I'm so bad about this stuff.
I wouldn't be able to tell you the difference.
Oh my God.
They're a vibe.
They're just a vibe. Vision boards definitely is a coaching tool. And I think that, Renisha, what I thought you were going, I think you kind of touched on this, but also like that element of creativity, bringing in a creative approach, because some people's brains do work creatively, and to just bring in kind of different, a lot of coaching is, you know, you're asking questions, you're feeding back, it's very vocal. And to switch up the approach a bit and think and give clients the ability to think through things creatively, I think is useful.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And also I think as well, I've heard of SMART goals before, and I was only ever at work, and I've never thought about using that in my own life.
Personal thing. Yeah, yeah.
Interesting.
Honestly, mind blown.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie. Uni kind of traumatized me with that of like writing reports, and you got to include a SMART goal or a SWOT analysis. And I'm just like, oh, I don't know.
My life right now.
But like thinking about it, personal aspects, I'm like, oh, I still don't know, but like, know. Oh, I should probably, you know, write my strengths, write my weaknesses, but like also the opportunities and possible threats, and threats being the UK government. but like, it's just something I didn't think to use personally.
Yeah. And then as well, like that whole identity piece, because I for some reason feel like I'm going through my first midlife crisis, and I'm like quarter life crisis. And I'm just like, who am I? Why am I here? Yeah. What am I doing the right? I mean, similar to you, like, am I doing the right thing? Is it worth staying here? Am I making the right financial choices? Am I fail again and go back again and restart all over again? It's like, I think for me, it's really interesting to hear as well, to develop, like, well, how are you able to make these decisions if you don't know who you are and what you want? And I'm like, damn, I don't. That's the problem. Cool. Now I got to figure that one out.
Yeah.
So we'll put that one as like the first question.
And I feel like we touched on it a bit, and we could go on for hours for this, but like community, right? I think it's just so huge. And I feel like we've been looking for community the moment we stepped into Scotland, right? Like, even though let's say we have each other, we're also two individual people going through our own life in Scotland, and like finding a community, like I said, whether that's, you know, someone who goes out, or someone who's experiencing the immigration laws that's similar, or entrepreneurs, like people we're looking for are not just like with our skin tone, right? But also with our goals and values in life, and how they can elevate us, and possibly how I can elevate them. And I think, community is always going to be so big for me, and always, I'm always going to look for a community, right? Like, I'm just going to have groups. And it's not to say that like I value the ones that I have any less, but as I grow as a person, I'm going to continue to find those that, I don't want to say benefit me, but like grows me as a person, I guess, right?
100%, or maybe the word is align, like maybe the align. Aligned to you.
Yeah.
And I think it's really interesting, because we also think about looking for community, and I wonder whether there's, I mean, I would love to, I think that Scotland experience, it must be so interesting for you both, but I just have so many questions about it anyway.
It is.
So we can look or find community, or also we can create. Right? Like, it's a, yes, I mean, you have to find people to create it, but also there's this element of, we can, and this goes back to autonomy, is that if we can, and if we don't see the communities that align with us, or we can't find that, how can we create it also ourselves? Have you found community in Scotland? Like, you Interesting.
We have a, like, it's funny, right? We just both hesitated on that question. I want to say we have, and let me rephrase that. I want to say I have, right? I don't want to speak for Nat, but in a sense of like, we have a community from going to uni, right? And we built, whether that was with like a global social justice network or someone, I don't even know how to describe the bar group, but like that friendship of like
brown people,
international, yes, an international community. You have a work community. So yes, but I feel like because we just hesitated, it isn't what we wanted.
I would say for me, it's, I found people that I would consider the beginning of a community. I think for me, I struggle for what community should look like and what that should be. So I think for me, when I'm searching, I never really know what I'm searching for. And I'm hoping like, if I do find it, then one day it'll click, but I don't have, I'm not quite as, I think you have a vision of what you like and
exactly.
the community you have,
exactly.
but I don't, I don't have that. So I think that's why we both struggle a lot of times when we talk about community, because it's like, we do have groups of people we hang out with and we do have beginnings of it.
It's not
for different reasons. We both feel a little bit unfulfilled, I guess, in that sense of like, we're still searching.
Interesting. And this is kind of, it's really, that is such a good and valid point, because something, again, that is central to the way that I work with clients is language. And starting with, and Renisha, we did this exercise where we talk about our values, but all the time kind of asking, what does this mean to you? But what is the definition of this to you? Because yes, there are set dictionary definitions, but actually what something means to you might mean something different to me. And it's really what you're saying there is, what is my definition of community? What do I need community to be for me? Not for anyone else, what is community for me? And I think that is something that you've hit the nail on the head. Like, those are the things that we really need to unpack before we even, you know, go in and start looking for things,
like,
what does it mean?
Ooh, I feel like I'm getting a good therapy session. Oh my god, I'm gonna walk away feeling like I'm gonna sleep good tonight. Like,
yeah. And also, Nat, you will intrinsically know what that is. It's just that you probably haven't had the space or time to reflect it, right? Like, you will know what that looks like. It's just kind of unpacking that further. Yeah,
I think something important, just like what you said of how you're feeling now, that Trisha always tells me is like, after our sessions, like, don't do anything else. Like, settle into what we talked about, how I'm feeling. And I think, yes, after the sessions with Trisha, I really do think about that. And I hope, like, again, people listening, they'll do the same when listening to this podcast, in a sense of just like, don't do anything else, or just take at least 30 minutes to yourself and just settle in of what you heard. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think that's so, so important. And I love that you tell me that every session, because I will immediately close the session and probably go do something else. And that's really bad of me.
But it's also this notion of bringing it back to kind of women, I guess, in general, is that I saw this quote on social media the other day that I don't know if you've both seen it. It's like, I never knew a rested woman. Like, I never knew a rested woman. And I think it's this notion of like, we think that we constantly have to be on the go. We constantly, even if things are going good, sometimes we like make it in our minds that, it's going too good. So what can I worry about now? However, there is this notion of, I say it purposely after my sessions, because we cover a lot and it's like really giving yourself the time to digest, but also just allowing ourselves to feel, to be, to rest, to and I talk to Nisha about this all the time. It's one of actually slow down our minds. You know, some people use meditation and, you know, that's all great, but, you know, just really just allowing yourself to recognize where you are now, where you're going to be. I guess part of it is like a gratitude practice. I would say just giving yourself that time, not always feeling like we have to be on, busy, overthinking, thinking of the worst. If it's good, allow it to be good. If you want to feel, allow yourself to feel. So I'm
I was about to say, I just need your recording of your voice saying that. So I can play it and remind myself.
Just wake up to Trisha's voice and I'm like, that's an affirmation.
Oh man, 100% yes. But
you know what? Me too.
Just play yourself in the morning.
I need to remind myself.
And I think I didn't have a whole big understanding of what a life coach or empowerment coach was prior to even the session, prior to even talking to Renisha a little bit. So I think this has definitely opened up my eyes to like maybe things that I need to think about as well, and things that would be beneficial just in general for anybody. But there's only one of you, and I'm sure, you know, your capacity would probably at one point hit a max and you'll be like, all right, doing too much. But are there any books or podcasts or other resources that you would recommend, or even for people that are trying to find personal growth that you use yourself, or, you know, if they're not able to afford or get to a life coach now, that you would recommend?
So I'm going to really say something that probably isn't popular. Well, I know it's not popular. So I think there are amazing personal development books out there, amazing podcasts. I listen to, you know, the Jay Shetty podcast, for example, is one that I do find myself, I listen to that a lot. However, something that I have found really useful, because I think one of the key components of personal development is self-awareness. So having self-awareness. And one of the ways that I have found myself to be able to be aware is through reading other people's stories. Seeing myself in other people's stories, and then also seeing like what I don't like in other people's stories, right? So memoirs are something that I find really useful in my own personal development. You're nodding that, and I hear that from a lot of people, that reading memoirs have really helped to like open up their eyes or think about their life in a different way. And so I think anything that you're, especially if you're just getting started in the personal development space and you don't want to be, and you're thinking like, oh, I want to start thinking about, you know, myself, I feel like reading other people's stories can be really beneficial to start building that awareness of yourself. So memoirs, I would say, and I read them all, everything from the ones that look and sound like you. Like I recently read Jada Pinkett Smith's memoir. I know, controversial. Also, but they're great. You know, I've read Shoe Dog by Phil Knight, who's the founder of Knight. Mm-hmm. And that's a really inspirational memoir about entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. And there are so many, like Nelson Mandela's, Trevor Noah, you know, men and women alike, just so many different memoirs that just I have felt inspired by.
I think that's so awesome that you said that, because I feel like I also do the same thing, and I try to read as well as much like memoirs by Latinos and Latinas, because I feel like there's such wide experiences that happens with anybody. But and then there's always key things. I feel that I'm reading a book now, and it's one of those where I'm reading it and I'm also like kind of feel bad, because like everything that she's saying, I'm like, I agree with everything you're saying. Oh my God, this is how I feel. And then I'm thinking like, am I challenging myself or am I reaffirming my own beliefs? I'm like, nah, it's fine. It's great. Like, I just feel good.
I love it.
So building off the conversation and stuff that we have, what advice would you give to someone who's considering becoming a life empowerment coach or even seeking personal development? Because I'm not going to lie, even hearing your philosophy and everything, my first thought was like, are you training? Like, are you taking people on your next
step in your entrepreneurship?
Right.
Yes. So those that are seeking a career in life coaching, honestly, my only advice would be, whatever you want to do in life, and this is if you're a life coach or not, just do it. Like, as a coach, I can share with you my own experience, but my experience will be different to yours. And I think that my favorite quote ever, maybe not ever, and I don't know who it's by, is be brave enough to suck at something. Mm. So whenever we start doing something, we're always going to suck. The first few coaching sessions that I did, I probably wasn't all the way great, you know, but it's about perseverance. And I think if you're looking for a career in life coaching, if that's what you want to do, do it without the fear, do it without worrying about what other people are going to think of you. Do the research around, you know, the what diploma you want to get and where, and you know, who you want your audience to be. But ultimately, and this is with anything, just do it. Just back yourself, right? We never get told enough to just back ourselves. Whatever you want to do, just go out and do it. And then for those that are seeking personal development, what I would say there is, and what I say to prospective clients is, what you have to be what you have to be ready for when working with a coach is, or thinking about really investing in yourself with personal development, is you have to be ready to make the changes that you want to make in life. A lot of people, and if you're not there yet, that's completely fine, right? The fact that you have the awareness of you may want to be there soon, then you will know when you're ready. You have, being in a position where you are ready to really take that step and make the changes, is, if you are thinking about personal development, you are someone, actually, I did some research recently around where I feel clients come to me the most. Mm-hmm. And it's at three stages. When they are anticipating change, so either you know a change is coming, like you know you're going to move house, you know you're going to move country, so you're anticipating a physical change, or you feel in yourself that you want something to change. Mm-hmm. I want something new for myself, something different, something better, anticipating change. Second bit, impact of change, the change itself. So you've started the new job and you're feeling overwhelmed. You've moved country and you don't know where to go for community. And therefore you have people that, I have clients that will then come to me at that stage. And then the impact of change. So now you've made all the changes that you want to make and you're grappling with this new leveled up version of yourself. Mm-hmm. That you're like, okay, now what does, who am I now? What does that look like? I might be feeling a bit lonely because you've let go of things that no longer serve you. Mm-hmm. So I think, one, if you are for your personal development journey, don't be scared. It's this space of having no fear and being ready to create the changes that you need to create. And if you work with coaches, coach them with you every step of the way. Like, that's what I say to my clients. I'm with you every step of the way of the journey. Some days it's little. And when I say change, there are small shifts and big shifts. Mm. And we make them, you know? Mm. That would be my advice.
All great advice. Me, myself, and I was just thinking about each step. And I was like, okay, I'm anticipating that change is either happening or it's about to happen. And then, yeah, I'm just waiting for the end goal. So, yeah.
Right. That flows. Like, mm-hmm. The fact that you could, like, place yourself on that journey. And if mm-hmm. you can place yourself, then it's an indication of, okay, I could, it would be beneficial to me to have extra support or work on this myself further or recognize that I would work.
I love that. Mm-hmm. I love that. Yeah, I think this podcast is such a great, great podcast to start off with, and so powerful, because I think as we're sitting here relating to everything you're being said, but also just thinking about, again, the similarities that us women of color have gone through, even if we're across the seas, and then the development, the ways of thinking about how it's okay, you know, it's just, I feel like such a great way to start off. And mm-hmm. it's just something that everyone needs to hear, even if we put this on repeat, because I definitely will listen to this on repeat, because I'm a person who is going to need it, hear it constantly. Like, I'm not, don't just tell me one time, which I'm going to sit here and nod my head and be like, yeah, yeah, you're right. But it's one of those where I got to keep telling myself that. Mm-hmm. And I think this podcast is a perfect thing to do.
Yeah. And I think as well, like, it's that, and then for me it's also hearing that it's okay to focus on myself and not feel guilty that I need to do this work and to be okay that I should make time to reflect to do this. And I feel like that, like, I always feel like I need somebody to remind me, like, no, it's okay to pause on your work and all whatever, because you got to focus on your own stuff. And I'm like, wait, what? That's something I have to do.
That is such an important point that you just raised. I had a client that when we were starting to work together, we were like exploring the idea. And then we started working together, and it was kind of four sessions in. And she was like, I have to be really honest with you. This has been so beneficial to me. However, when we first started talking about it, I thought this is going to be way too self-indulgent. And she said, she was like, I'm not comfortable with self-indulgent as much. She was like, this is like too much for me. And I was like, wow, that's a really interesting way to put it, like self-indulgent.
Look, I'm a Taurus. That's what I need. Maybe I should do life coaching as like my self-indulgence.
It is true. But we're not conditioned to do that. You know, I think I'm a big J-Lo fan, by the way, or like especially her old music. And she had she says, as women, she was talking about Latina women, actually, but I really resonated with it as a South Asian woman, not me personally, but I've seen, you know, my elders, it's, you put everyone else first. So, okay, I'll, you know, I'm cooking dinner and then I'll rush to get ready. Oh, I didn't get a chance to do my hair. I didn't get a chance to, you know, I'm always putting everyone else first. It's basically the message that she was saying, but the examples that she used were really great.
Spot on, yeah.
And I think that and we're all conditioned to do that, right? But women in general put everyone first except ourselves, but we can't pour from into cups. We have to fill our own first.
I love it. And to be fair, if you want to get your life corrected or, you know, self-indulge a little bit more, I definitely think you should follow Level Up London. You can follow her page on Instagram _LevelUpLondon_. Trisha, you're on LinkedIn as well. You're also, like you said, we'll also put your website out here for people to find as well, to continue to grow your community and grow your business in itself. But I know you have your the book club, and build on that. I'm definitely going to jump on that, because one of my new things are reading books this year. So definitely follow her for more. And I know you also work with great organizations as well, continuing to uplift, you know, women of color. And I think that's just absolutely amazing. You're always going to be like, again, you're just going to always be like an inspiration to me. And I'm never going to not think of you that way. But yeah.
Thank you so much.
Amazing.